Today's episode is made possible in part by our sponsors, including Salt and Light Eye Care. Thanks to New Mexico's faith-based boutique practice for expert vision care and advanced aesthetics and treatments. From eye exams to dry eye therapy, they help you see and shine with purpose. Dr. Mindy and her team go above and beyond. Plus, every visit helps support missions near and far. Learn more at saltandlighteyecare.com.
Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
What if the story you thought was over was actually just the beginning? In today's episode, I sit down with my daughter-in-law, Mandy Woodward. She's a wife, mom of four, and co-pastor of Citizen Church in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Her story is one of resilience and redemption. You're going to be so inspired by this episode. Stay tuned. Well, hey, Mandy, I am so excited to have you on Table Talks today. Honestly, I've been looking forward to this. So most people know I have three sons and then three daughters-in-laws, and you're married to our oldest son, Dustin, and we're just thrilled to have you today. Welcome to Table Talks.
Thank you. It's an honor. I'm a little nervous, but it's going to be fine.
Isn't it funny? Because when you sit around the real table, it's just easy to chat, and then you get behind something that's recording you. That's how I feel, and I have to make sense. Then all of a sudden I get really nervous. Like it has to mean something. I can't just cut jokes, which is what I'd like to do. I'd like to
you can edit out anything stupid I say we'll bring it down from an hour to 5 minutes.
Great. So you know what I love is that you have an amazing story. You have chapters to your story, part one and part two, and you shared it at conferences and in sermons. I've heard you speak numerous times, and a lot of times your history, your past adds to what's happening. So you'll talk about it, but a deep dive into your life before we met you is something I think that could help so many people, women and men, because a lot of us find ourselves in our lives needing to start over. And I think this is just your story is, your journey is so beautiful. It's a powerful reminder of new beginnings and God's ability to restore. And so we're just going to start there. We're just going to jump in and get going. Boy, you found yourself about 15 years ago or so. I was trying to do the math, but facing heartbreak. And you found yourself as a single mom of three young children. How did you get there? You were married for a while and you had three little kids. How old were they? And how'd you become single?
Yeah. Digging into this, I was looking through the questions you sent, and it feels like I'm telling someone else's story because so much time has passed and I haven't thought of so much of this in a long time. But so the long version, I guess, is I grew up pastor's kid. And right out of high school, I went to Bible college, and there in Bible college, I was studying to be in ministry. I always felt that call in my life to be in ministry. And while I was there, I met my ex-husband, and we had a lot in common, and he was very musical and both wanted to be in ministry. And so I think, the power of your story is, the truth is, I wasn't heartbroken. I was only heartbroken because my marriage was, it was special. And I thought this was going to be forever. And so we get married right out of college, and we ended up in Alabama, which is crazy. I always wanted to live there, which is, I know that sounds funny, but I always one day I'm going to live in Alabama. It just sounded like a great place to live. So we ended up there in Mobile, Alabama, actually right outside of Mobile in a town called Sims, Alabama. If you're from there, you would say Sims with two syllables. But in it is a really great church with pastors that really so many people in that church has shaped me, and just in a great place to raise your family. And so had Avery just in 2005, so a very young, I wanted to be a young mom, and then I ended up with Aslan at 35, so not so young. So I've been a young mom and an old mom. Okay. But I had Avery in 2005, had Aiden, or had Avery in 2003, Aiden in 2005. And not too long after Aiden was born, my ex-husband had the opportunity to go back to school to get his music degree. We were in ministry. He had his Bible degree, but he really wanted to just, you know, sharpen his craft and go back to school. And I was super excited, like, oh, this is such a cool opportunity. He had a full ride to the University of Mobile, and it's a Southern Baptist college in Mobile, and just a great university there. And so he went back to school, and just a lot of things took place during that time. And I try to be careful with my words, because I know we all find ourselves in situations where we make decisions we shouldn't, or we should, yeah, and just do things that we wish we never had. But I think just because of the circumstances, he was a young, you know, dad, and most of the students there were not in that phase of life. So he's hanging around with a lot of, you know, music majors who are not, they don't have families. And so I don't think it was intentionally, maybe, but I think we were kind of a secret at home. You know, like, he had a separate life, and just a lot of things took place that should not have. And so I'm trying to figure out which part I want to tell, but I went when Aiden was probably, I don't know, June, July, 4 or 5 months old, I went to my dad's 50th birthday party in London, Kentucky. So I drove to Kentucky with Avery in the backseat, Aiden in the backseat, two babies, and my sister Kara went with me, and we had the best time. And I guess I was naive even just about marriage. I mean, what did I know? I thought maybe it was just, I knew my marriage wasn't amazing, but also we had two small kids, and there's a lot to kind of process. So maybe I was just naive at what shape my marriage is really in, but we drove all the way back from Kentucky from this long road trip, you know how that is. And it's, I dropped Kara off at her house, and I pull into my drive, and I just had this feeling like something feels off, and unloaded the kids, put them in the bed, and he's sitting in the dark in the living room, and he says something really terrible has happened. And like, what is it? What is it? And he said, due to some of terrible decisions on his part, he was asked to not be enrolled. They were kicking him out at the University of Mobile, and he was losing his scholarships and unable to continue the program. And then that night just turned into a night of just a lot of confession of all the things that had been going on for years, really, without me knowing. And it was just a devastating night. I think I was pretty young and, you know, immature emotionally, but I think I never saw it coming. And so, I mean, I don't think I slept all night. Just asking so many questions, but not really wanting to hear the answers. I remember waking up the next morning and everyone's still sleeping, walking through my house and just feeling like a death had happened. And I do not want to cry. It was just a horrible feeling of all these things that you imagine your life looking like, and all of these, you know, dreams of marriage and kids and ministry. And I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my mom and dad. I didn't tell anybody for a little bit. And on that day, I don't know why I didn't just cancel, but we had a nursery workers breakfast at Cracker Barrel because it was a small church and we all just kind of jumped in and did everything. So I felt like I couldn't cancel because everybody would be asking questions. And so I remember just going, I'm going to go to this breakfast. I did that. Now it would be like, have breakfast on your own, but I'm driving there, and you're from Mobile, so you know all the streets and what I'm talking about, but I'm driving down Schillinger Road, And I just remember the song "You Are God Alone" came on the radio, and I honestly hated that song. I never liked that song, but it hit me so hard. I cried all the way to Cracker Barrel because it was "You're God Alone," and right now I'm the good times and bad. And it really kind of set the tone for the next, what I didn't realize, the next few years of my life of fighting this battle of through just intimacy with God and worship. And so I also remember the rest of the day being so ridiculous, just trying to process everything. And I don't know why I remember going to the tanning bed because I wanted to be alone. That's so weird. I got in the tanning bed and just cried and cried and cried because I didn't want anybody to see me crying, and then went home and tried to pull it together. And so this is such a long, I could talk forever about each day, but finally opened up to our pastor, and he loved us so much, and they're just amazing people. And he ended up saying, he said, "Guys, I can't keep you on staff with all of this that has happened." He said, "And if the University of Mobile feels like it's bad enough to kick you out of college, then I'm sorry." And I'm begging, because I feel like if we could just get him to help us or allow us to stay in Mobile and heal and have restoration in our church, that that was our best shot for making it. And he said, "The only way I'll allow you guys to stay and be a part of everything is if you can get the University of Mobile to let him back in." And I think you find out a lot about yourself in these times, because I didn't think I was a fighter, but I mean, a fighter rose up in me. Like, I'm going to fight for this. I'm going to fight for my kids, my family, my marriage. And so I don't even remember how, but I found the home number of the director of student affairs at the University of Mobile. His name is Brian Boyle, and he's such a big part of the story and probably doesn't even remember us. But I found his number, I guess, because it was after hours, and I called him at home. "This is not even like me. Like, I don't know." And I just said, "I need to talk to you. I've got to talk to you about this." And he said, "Okay, come in tomorrow morning and I'll talk with you guys." And so we go in, and our pastor goes with us. And he was just a strong support to us in this time. And so we go and sit down in his office, and I'm pleading, just let him finish school. Let him go through some sort of restoration process. We need our family to stay together. We want to stay on track, you know. And he is a Southern Baptist boy, big time. Like, he's just a great guy. But I wouldn't say that the gifts of the Spirit is something that he would be operating in, the gift of prophecy. You know what I mean? Yeah. But he prophesied that day in that room. You could feel the Holy Spirit so much. So first he was saying, "There's no way he can come back to school. Everything that has been reported to me, all of these things that have gone on as a student, he can't come back to school." But he kept talking. It's like he started talking himself into something else. And it was like the Spirit of God shifted his heart in the middle of this long, like, monologue. He was giving us a why and all this. And then he looks us in the eye and he says, "You know, you will graduate. You will walk across this stage. And you're going to see it as a testimony of God's power and restoration." And then he stopped and he said, "But I want you to get this. God will not be mocked in this. He will not be mocked. So you better toe the line, buddy." And I mean, we felt the gravity of that. And fast forward, I'm talking so long, I'm sorry if you want to interject anywhere. But fast forward, we ended up, he stepped back from stage platform ministry. I stepped into that role, and we went through counseling. And I just want you to realize, like, how many years of restoration and all the things that took place. And so years passed, and I feel like, although there was a lot of wounds and so much to work through, I felt like, okay, I think we're good. I think that God healed our marriage and everything's great. And I ended up getting pregnant with Asher, our third. And it was like, as soon as I found out I was pregnant, all hell broke loose again. And I really don't know the psychology of that, or if there is any. I just know that everything started falling apart. And I had no, like, actual evidence of like more infidelity or anything like that. I just knew things weren't good. And like he was just not around. Things are just not good. And I felt like a single mom. And so many stories I could tell, but it just was not a good season. And I remember driving the morning I was getting induced with Asher. And I remember looking out the window and just tears streaming because I wish I was going to the hospital in better circumstances. I just wished it. My marriage felt different than he did, you know. We ended up naming Asher Asher, which means happy. And everyone that knows Asher, I mean, especially as a toddler and a little baby, he was just the sunshine of the season. He was such a, he's just a nut. And he was just that sunshine, the joy, the happiness in the midst of everything. And so Asher was born in June. It's pretty rocky for a few months. And then January of 2010, it was just a few months after. So Asher was 6 months old. That's when everything officially ended. He left. And yeah, that's how I got to that point of, I really didn't know what was going to happen. I was just kind of waiting. Like, what did my pastor think? I did not want to put them in a weird position, but I wanted to stay. I wanted to stay in ministry. I wanted to keep my kids in their same house and the same environment. And so he said, you don't have to go anywhere. You can be our worship pastor and you can just stay, which I'll never forget that because, I mean, the community, the power of the church was amazing. So they surrounded me. So, I stayed on staff there and yeah, 30 years old. I just turned 30 in October. And then a few months later, found myself single mom. Three little kids. That's a very long answer.
I know that people that are listening, most of them have never heard all that part because you can't go into that detail when you're speaking at a conference. Yeah. But they sometimes think, you know, you were abandoned, your husband walked away, so you got a divorce. This was years. This was something that you tried to try so hard, and you tried so hard. You fought for his, not just your marriage, but his salvation. I mean, the whole big picture and your children. When we met you, the first picture I saw of you, which I'm not gonna cry, but you were on the stage at your church getting Asher dedicated by yourself. A single mom with two little kids and baby Asher, and there you were. And that is not what you felt your life was destined for. And I can imagine that it felt like, I mean, this is just going to be it. I can do this. I'm strong. I can raise these children. They'll be in a godly home. And at least we won't have the turmoil of what was happening. And what do you think, what was the hardest part about rebuilding during that season when you were first all alone?
I don't know. I mean, there's the hardest part. I think, people can say some really stupid things. So although a lot of people were amazing and surrounded me, there were also weird comments, like your kids are going to be damaged forever and those kinds of things. And I know that there's lasting impact with divorce, but I was like, don't say that about my kids. And I think that people mean well, but they can say ridiculous things. I think the exhaustion, but I really feel like I was in just like this bubble wrap of God's grace. I look back and I think I was tougher than I am now because I had, maybe I was naive. I don't know. I was good because I felt just the strength of God through everything. And I had so many amazing people. Like I had a lady, she's passed away now, but her name was Judy that went to our church and she came and watched Asher because I was working two jobs at the time. I was a preschool teacher and then at the church, and she would watch Asher. She would walk in my door. She was a retired lady, and she would immediately start a load of laundry and start making the beds before I was even out the door. And so that kept my sanity because my house wasn't a pigsty. There's no way I could have handled all of that. So she would watch him keep my house clean. And I'm not even going to say how little I paid her because I feel guilty. But it was just a huge blessing. People in the church, men who would just you know, take Aiden fishing, or so many people surrounded me in that time. So I can't understate the value of being a part of a church, for sure. But, you know, the most difficult thing I would say, I remember the dedication day of Asher and thinking, I hate this, but I'm not going to allow this to change what I've done with all my kids. I've dedicated all my kids to the Lord. So I'm doing this. So we just went for it. Yeah.
And that is, I mean, you know, we both were raised in pretty strict environments where, you know, people stayed married. They didn't get divorces. And the singleness of all that. Times have changed, which is a blessing to so many who walk through seasons that they have no choice that they're walking through. And you had so much, like you said, love and around you and community and your family support, your mom and dad and your sisters.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. How they supported you.
My mom would drive down so much, and that was a 10-hour drive. She would come down to Mobile often and just come down, buying clothes for the kids, just staying with me, being with me. It was such, I can't even imagine how it felt for them. You know, looking at my kids now, I'm like, I don't know. My kids go through that. I don't know if I could survive it. But they were so amazing.
You know, now, yes. As a mom of young adults, the pain your parents were feeling, what that you feel it for your kids almost more than you ever would for yourself. So they were feeling the pain, but wanting to help so much. And every time they saw you, they faced that pain they were having to face, which is a whole, you know, a whole different thing. And boy, I can't believe that, you know, how many years it's been. When I said 15, when I first started, I thought 15 years. What's the story, the irony to this whole story, just how God does it. You know, you just said you were living in Mobile this whole time. I'm from Mobile, Alabama. That's where I was born. You know, that's just crazy. And you were teaching at the school, the church school that where I went to church growing up. And it's where I graduated from high school, Evangel Christian School. I mean, that's where I went to high school.
Crazy.
Right, in 1979, which is crazy. And that's where you were. And not that that mattered wherever you live, but God just, he was so gracious to us to give us the Alabama girl who loves the Crimson Tide. I mean, all the
Roll
things
Tide.
Were important to me.
Yeah.
This could be a 3-hour episode or part 1, 2, and 3, but we'll fast forward a couple of years, not that long. And, because Dustin doesn't waste any time on anything. If anyone knows him, if he gets a thought, if he looks at a little baby puppy, he's going to get the puppy. If he looks at a new car, he's getting the car. And he met a woman by God's divine providence in the kitchen of my home. But anyway, you had been through so much. And I've heard your story, but I'd like you to tell everybody, did you think you would marry again? Did you feel like you'd marry into a ministry?
No, I hadn't really. I don't think I had time to think about it. I was just, I don't know. I was just doing the best I could. So I really hadn't thought about it at all. But I came, and I tell the story all the time at our, like, new here at our church dinners, because it's just kind of like, it's a funny, like, how Dustin and I met. But all of this had gone on and I'm like exhausted. My mom tells me, hey, go visit your sister in Albuquerque. I'm going to watch the kids for you and just go out there and sleep, rest, take a nap every day. And just, she was just worried, you know, mom's worry. And so she sent me out to Albuquerque. Well, I land and Kara says, I want you to go meet my mother-in-law, my pastor. My mother-in-law now. So I want you to meet my pastor. She really wants to meet you. Well, I had no idea it was you. I had no idea I was going to be married into your family, but so I was like, okay, that's now that I know you, it makes sense. Cause you're like, I'm leaving tomorrow on vacation. I want to meet your sister. So you bring her over. You're like telling her what to do. And she's like, okay. So she brings me up to your house and then Dustin walks in. I think he left his dog at your house again. And you loved that. I know. He was picking up his dog. He didn't live there, but we met briefly in the kitchen and nothing to it. But I've told this before, but I remember walking out of your house and just this random crazy thought entered my mind of like, if any family would want me or accept me, it would be them. Because I've heard so many stories about you guys and, you know, the hospitality and, you know, the people that you've, you know, taken into your home. And So, and I just felt that. And then we get back to Kara's house, and then Dustin DMs her, "How old is Mandy?" And the rest is history.
And just how fast it is. I wish he, I know he's home right now. We could just have thrown him in, but
We should.
he all of a sudden felt the call of the Lord to help your church
He
strengthen
did.
your youth ministry. Dustin was our youth pastor then, and he wanted your church to strengthen their youth ministry, to kind of help get some systems going. So he volunteered, as he's such a
Wow, he's so godly.
is. He volunteered it, so he doesn't know because my parents were still alive. They lived there. He had a place to stay. So he started going to Mobile to visit, help the church with their youth ministry, and then that's how he started getting to know you. And things started happening, quickly. And I feel like that. I mean, I don't know. I do know this, so I want you to speak to this because I think it's an important part. You met him, and I know. I feel like he probably started saying he wanted to get serious quickly. I think when he met you, he knew. He knew
Sure.
what God had been saving for him. And he was not that young. He was in his, how was he, 27 or?
He was 27. I was 31, 32. I don't know. I think 31. And I know our first date, if you will, he had been visiting down there, like you said, just really ministering to the young people of since. But we went on a first date to like the Fairhope area. I don't know if you're familiar with that area, like if you're watching, but we went to like one of those like Japanese restaurants where they like load your plates up. It's called Sticks. And I mean, it's so much food anyway. Like, how they do like tons of rice and noodles and all that. And they bring our food. And he just said, "I hope I don't scare you, but I think I'm going to marry you."
This episode is also brought to you in part by the DenCloud team at Coldwell Banker Legacy Real Estate. Jason and Bree bring unmatched experience and a personal touch to every home journey. Start today at homebuyingabq.com. Hey friends, I'm so glad you're here. If you're enjoying this episode, please take a second to subscribe, leave a quick review, and share it with a friend. It's the best way for people to find the podcast and be encouraged. Now, back to the conversation.
I did not eat another bite. I mean, like my plate stayed looking exactly the same. I was like, "Oh gosh, okay, well," I'm like, "I hope you remember. I have three small children." And he hadn't met them yet. I don't think he had met them yet. And I tried to keep them away as long as possible, just to, so he'd get to know me first. I don't want to scare him away.
Because how old were your kids then? How old were the children at that point?
Asher, oh gosh, he had just turned one, I think, so it was a year later, and then five and six, almost seven, or something like that. Yeah, so little and good kids, but there also wasn't a dad in the home, so they were probably a little unruly. And I'll never forget, I went to dinner with all of you guys, were down there for vacation, and I went to dinner with you guys. This is before we were actually dating, we were just talking, I suppose you could say. And Asher, like they gave him a lemon. I think it was Dustin gave him a lemon to suck on. They thought it was funny, and he threw up at the table. I was mortified. So anybody out there that's trying to date with babies and small children, it is not for the faint of heart. It is so embarrassing. You can't control him. You're just like, "I'm so sorry. He just threw up on the table."
And when you could sense it getting serious, I mean, I feel like that I remember this, that you had a talk with him and basically said, "Okay, going this direction."
Yeah, he's a verbal processor. So any fear or anxiety he had about becoming a dad, he would say out loud. And finally, I couldn't take that. My heart couldn't even take that. So I just said, "Here's the deal. Either you're in or you're out. So if you're in, stop saying you're scared and just get over it. And if you're out, that's fine. But I can't keep. I'm not on this roller coaster, so do what you're going to do." And he said, "Okay." And he never once again, because it was more like, it wasn't like, "I'm nervous." It was like, "I don't know if this is the right thing," that kind of thing. And I'm like, "Don't process that with me.
And he also
Talk to
gave
the
you
Lord."
he didn't want to drag your kids through something else that wasn't going to work out because they had already been disappointed. You know, they were living trauma they didn't even know they had at that point. And, you know, I'm sorry, I keep wiping my nose, but I did not think I would cry. I've heard this story so many times. I'm sitting here.
A million times.
And my nose, and anyway, it won't be that pretty to watch. But I know that you were like, you would survive, but you were not going to bring your kids through another heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And you know, you do it. And how, I know that that was a process, but this was quick. This was not like this was years in developing. We met you that summer, and then by the next March, you guys were engaged.
Yeah.
By that September.
Yeah. So I wondered if he was coming to propose, but I don't know. I couldn't tell exactly, but he said, "Where are you right now?" Because he was trying to surprise me. And I said, "Well, I'm at Pete's party castle." It was like a Chuck E. Cheese or something with the kids. So here he shows up to Pete's party castle. And I'm like, this is the life you want, I guess, because it's wild. But he showed up there and he said, "We're going to go out to eat tonight." And I was like, okay, this is probably it. And it was, you know, but it was, yeah,
how did
just
he
a wild.
I know he verbally said it because he verbally says everything. He got it
yes
straight from me. It is, I hate that he had to get that part of me, but I know he had to tell you why he was not just choosing you, but he wanted to be their father. I mean, he knew he wanted to be a daddy, right? That was, he didn't want to do it part-time. He wanted to be their father.
You know, I think he's always, his whole entire life, he's been an adult, you know, in a child's body from what I hear. I wasn't around for it, but he's always had that nature of like kind of fathering everyone. So I think it came pretty naturally to him. He was pretty hard on himself in those first few years, but he did such a great job. And he still often says to me, "One of my biggest callings in life is to set Avery, Aiden, and Asher, and now Aslan, up for what God has in their heart." And he's like, I honestly feel like my role in life is way less about what I'm going to accomplish on earth. You know, it's more about what they're going to accomplish. And I forget, you know, I forget that he's not their biological dad a lot of times until they're very, all of them are very, all three of the older ones are very like outgoing when it comes to being on stage and very artsy and creative. So then I'm like, okay, well, maybe, because Dustin would rather die than do what some of them do sometimes.
None of my sons would. I mean, they're all so brave on stage, and our whole family, your pastors, the three, do not like public speaking or being in front of people, and they chose a vocation that puts them in front of people all the time. And I think what you're saying, I mean, we had the blessing and privilege, Dustin did, and our family, of adopting all three of the older kids, Avery, Aiden, and Asher, just a few years into the marriage. Lots of laws, and we had to, you know, walk through all that. But that was something really important to my husband, Galen, and myself, and my parents. They had this they really wanted to, for that to happen. My dad passed away before it happened, but my mom was still alive. And that was such a beautiful experience. And we would have loved them like our own, whether the adoption happened or not. But God, that was really a desire of all of our hearts. And that was beautiful. So you've had we had a blended family, and then they became Woodwards through adoption, which that whole story is amazing too. Their birth certificates now say Woodward. I mean, God gave us the picture of adoption. And now that we've walked through it, we can see it so beautifully and how he gave his son Jesus. And then he adopted us into the family of God. I mean, we know that now. I couldn't love more. I forget. I think I've known them their whole life. Like I think I've known them. One of the most beautiful things your mom did for me early on is she made a photo album for us of all the kids' pictures when they were little, when they were babies and toddlers, because we missed that part of their life. And that was so special. But I still forget. Aiden's really tall. And I say all the time, "Oh, my dad was tall." And I forget. I think I love that that's how God does when he blends a family that we don't know any different. And that's a lot what you had to help the kids navigate, but God was gracious. God was merciful. And
yes,
through that whole thing.
It was, yeah, so much transition. But I mean, I know I'm biased, but I just feel like our church is one of the most, if not the most, welcoming environments anyone can walk into. And I just felt accepted immediately. Like, okay. And I think maybe not, but I feel like most people in our church looked at Dustin like he was youth, young adult pastor. He was your firstborn. I'm sure they talked like one day he'll be the pastor of his church. So I kind of felt like I was, kind of trying out for a position, But it was fine because everybody was so welcoming, and the kids, I mean, immediately they just connected. I know it was the grace of God because it just wasn't that difficult of a transition. It really wasn't. And yeah, blended family is difficult, but family is difficult. So I think that a lot of people think, oh, this is because we're a blended family. And I think if you dig in a little bit, you'll realize, no, family's just difficult. And some things are because it's blended, but some difficulties are just because family is hard work in general. So if you're a blended family, if you're trying to blend a family right now and you're listening, be encouraged that it's okay. It's not just because it's a blended family. It's just family. And one of the things that we talked about, like when Avery was middle school, and it just felt like she just wasn't, attached to Dustin, and he was like, oh, she doesn't want to talk to me, or she doesn't want to snuggle, or she's too. And we were talking to a couple of dads in our church, and they said, oh, well, our daughters don't either, and they're biological. They're like, don't sweat it. It really helped him a lot knowing, like, oh, I think I'm overthinking this blended family thing. I think it's just she's in middle school and doesn't want to do this right now,
And our middle schoolers are a little bit weird. They all are a little bit weird, and they go through, and girls go through so much that they just change so much, and then they get back to normal as they get a little rhythm
Praise the
going.
Lord.
I agree with that with people. We made a commitment to power through whatever the kids might have been going through. If they did not know us, they didn't know us literally. You guys, when you guys moved here, this is backtracking a little bit. When you moved here, we've been in Gulf Shores, and Avery and Asher stayed with us to fly back, and you had Aiden with you. They didn't know us at all. They just met us, and we asked Avery, call us. And we gave her some options of names, and she picked KK and Pop. We loved that we had immediate grandkids. I mean, we were destined to be, our calling is grandparenting. Like, we were good parents. We are really good grandparents. And so to jump into the joy of grandparenting on day one, we would never regret. We love that we didn't have to wait like years for that to happen. We just jumped in and took them on, and they stayed here all the time. We loved it. And then Aslan came just a couple of years later, and she's now 11 years old. And
Oh, wild.
it is just the way that they all have blended together, the way they love their little sister, and she doesn't know anything different, than having her life. And she's handled all that. She knows the whole story, a lot of the story now, and she gets it. At first, she didn't understand how they could have a different dad than Dustin when she first started learning that. But you guys have done such a good job with the kids. So, which leads me to these last minutes together. So she was born in 2014. You guys were still doing young adult, youth pastor, and then maybe Dustin started doing executive pastor stuff around that time, kind of grooming to get ready for the eventual day that we would transition the church and not be the lead pastors anymore. But I know because I've heard your story that you thought early on that God would, you probably would not be in ministry with married again. I mean, someone get married in the future, but how would a pastor, like, that just wasn't the norm, that some you marry a pastor and you already have children, and how would that look? And so there it happened. I mean, it was a desire. Your parents are pastors, your grandparents are pastors, you wanted to do ministry. That's what you felt called to do. But I don't think you ever saw yourself doing it alone when you were going off to Bible college. You thought, you have a spouse, and did you ever feel like God wouldn't use you to the capacity that maybe you that something so bad had happened in your life, you had no it wasn't your fault, but that maybe that he wouldn't use you to the level you thought he might?
You know there are consequences to sin, even on people who they weren't the ones that did something. People, that's one of the tragedies of bad decisions, is that it affects people around you and not just you. So that there is that reality that I thought it's very possible that maybe these big dreams of, what God would do in my life, maybe I just should settle in, raise the kids, and just, do the best I can. But as far as like dreaming big about ministry, goals and aspirations and this big calling, no, I never imagined. And but you know what though? I feel like that's probably most people's story. Like you find yourself in a place where you're like, oh my goodness, I never thought that God would do something so incredible. I never imagined I would be here. I never thought that I would get to this place, because God always does so much more than you can dream or imagine. But did I think that I would? I never imagined. No. Short answer. No, I did not think that I would find myself in this place. And we just had a flourish night. It's like our women's ministry, for those listening that might not understand, but we do 3 big nights a year. Then we do a conference, and we had an amazing night on Monday. And I was so emotional during worship. I turn around and the auditorium is just full of women worshiping God. And it was just the presence of God. And we were singing the Sure Been Good song. And when it started, it was like, you've been better to me than I could ever have. And then the second verse is like, you're making me into something more than I could ever have dreamed. And I was not okay. I was like, because it was just this moment, like a snapshot of God, you've done so much more with me than I ever could have imagined. And man, you've been so good. So, so good. So
I love that. I think that so many times we sing the songs, but I try so hard when songs like that, when we're singing songs about God's faithfulness, I really try to go back, because now it's been, 45 years almost in ministry, but I let myself go back to my teen years when I thought, I have screwed this up. There is no way. I mean, you some choices you don't get a redo. And I thought, there's no way God's going to use me what I thought when I was 16, how he called me. And I really don't want those songs to just pass by in a church service or in my car or whatever, when I want to remind myself of God's faithfulness. He doesn't need to be reminded. He knows he's faithful. But I remind myself, God, you're faithful. You carried me and helped me and my craziness to get to this place. So I totally can relate to what you're saying. And we don't want to, let those moments pass, that we soak it in, because now you and Dustin are co-pastors for 5 years now, which is crazy to me. I feel like it was a day, honestly.
Yeah, same.
My life is just on fast forward times 10, like when you're hurrying through a show. And at 5 years, you've been co-pastor at Citizen Church. And I know, thank goodness our stories shape us, right? I'm so glad that I have my story. When I stand there now, I think, I don't deserve this. And none of us do. And I think, God, you have favored me. I am highly favored. And so when you stand there, you speak, you preach, you lead worship, when you can, or when they need you. And I just think you're absolute best at that. You're so seasoned at it that you're just comfortable. You're so good. Not only are you a good vocalist, but you're a great leader of worship, a great speaker. And how did your story shape you? When you stand there, I think I know the answer to that, but I'd love you to tell people listening, how did that story, look at what all happened, and you stand there with boldness and declare the word of the Lord. How was that?
I remember like going through like a couple of years of transition before we became pastors, and just having a lot of prayer moments going, God, I don't know if I can do this. And just, you have these moments of like, oh my gosh, this is a lot. And I don't know if I can do this. And I remember being at a stop sign, and I know exactly where I was. I was at Central and Elizabeth at a stop sign. And I remember just God reminding me, you've been forged in the fire. So you have a strength because of what you've gone through. I'm going to use that, and you're going to be okay. It's not going to be easy. And he's still perfecting in the fire often. But yeah, he takes all the pain, but then all the victories And then you can have confidence, you know, because you get to know God. Dustin preached about that this past Sunday, about it's, you know, you can know about God, but the things I know about God are things that I was taught really during that season and all the difficult seasons. I learned how to pray. I mean, I used to pray, but in that season, I learned how to, like, really, you know, touch heaven for my kids, and then learn how to protect my spirit. I want to guard my words and not, I've tried, you know, to do that, especially, you know, with the three older kids and their biological dad. I never, ever wanted to say things that would be harmful to him or hurt him. Just try to watch your words so you protect your spirit, because it matters, and what you minister out of, it matters. And I want to have a spirit that is, you know, pleasing to God. And I don't know, I feel like I'm rambling now.
It's really, I mean, the fact that you learned how to pray during your trial. I mean, when I was young, that's when I had all my issues, but I didn't learn how to pray. I was awful. My parents learned how to pray when I was a teenager. Their prayer life got really good, but my pastoring taught me how to pray, because I didn't know that walk that I was about to walk. I could not imagine what that was going to entail, the highs and the lows. And having teenagers that walk through something, and children, and now adult children and grandchildren, I feel like my prayer list has 17 now instead of a few of, you know, me and then the kids, and it just gets more. But that is your story, Forged in the Fire. That is an amazing, you know, way. I think so. We all feel I wish it didn't have to be that way, but at least good comes from it. At least we're going to go through trials. We said that.
Yes.
Honey, we're going to go through it. So if we're going to have to go through it, at least we know that if we submit ourselves to Christ during that, we can come out with something better, you know, and crazy. So now, you know, we've just got a few minutes left, maybe five, but what do you think you've learned about yourself most since y'all been lead pastor? 5 years. What have you learned about Mandy that you did not know?
Since being pastor, I don't remember reading this question, Kay. What have I learned about myself? Oh, I've learned how to be open-handed, because I don't like saying goodbye to people. And that's something big that I've learned about myself, is that I'm more selfish than I thought I was. And that's a huge lesson that God has taught me, of just be open-handed and allow God to work in people. And the people that are supposed to be here are here, and the people that are not, they're not, and everything's going to be okay.
I don't think you're selfish. I'm going to rephrase that for you. I think that when you love big, and you put yourself out there, because the opposite could be true. You could close yourself off and choose not to love big, and then it wouldn't matter when people come and go, when church people come and go, or staff come and go. But you choose to open yourself up and love big. So with loving big, sometimes can come some of the hardest goodbyes and hurts. What you said is being open-handed and saying, it does work out. You know, I'm still kicking, so it does work out. My husband and I, we're still kicking. We're still kicking. So we know it works out. And that's a great thought. So I know your thoughts on ministry, but what do you think success looks like now to you? Not just ministry, but family and parenting. If someone said, just, you know, all those three things, ministry, parenting, and marriage, what does success look like to you? If someone said, what does it take to be successful? What would you say?
I would say, well, when it comes to my kids, obviously I just want them to know the Lord and to serve them with their whole heart. And so that's, to me, success would be the salvation of my kids and them, you know, wanting to hang out with me some. That would be really great. And for them not to have too many, you know, bitter feelings toward me as I get older. I hope that we have a great relationship. I think we will. So I think success in the family would be that they know how to serve the house of God, and they get it, and they love the Lord with their whole heart. Marriage is, you know, by the time all of this, you know, one thing we talk about this all the time, Dustin's such a future person that, you know, a week after we became pastors, he was already talking about retirement just because he can't help himself. He's always going to live years and years ahead. But we do talk about we're not going to always be pastors. This is not always going to be our life. Nothing lasts forever. And so for marriage, like, may we still enjoy one another and, you know, have a good relationship, because there's different, you know, seasons come and go, and different roles and all of those things come and go over time, and nothing stays the same ever. It changes all the time. Even from year to year, things change all the time. And so I think success in marriage would be, we still love each other and we're still together after all is said and done. And we still, you know, just genuinely have purpose no matter what season.
That you're still standing when you look back. I think that, you know, for me now, I do a lot of looking back. I feel like this podcast has caused me to look back every time I record one. I think about, you know, my life. But when you look back to say, we did it, you know, we jumped in, that's success too, you know, and that's what you're saying, is that you met God's calling with as much strength and dignity as you could, and you stayed faithful to him, your marriage, and faithful to your children. And I feel like that too, when it's all said and done. You know, I said this to a group of pastors recently, honestly, anybody could pastor the church that we pastor for years, not y'all, but while we were pastoring, someone else had come in, but no one else could pastor my family, but us. We're the only pastors of those sons, and now our grandchildren. I mean, you know, we have that influence. And so, so wise what you're saying to everybody. And you guys do that so well. You pastor them and the people at Citizen Church, and it's just growing crazy. Gosh, it goes by fast, this podcast. So 30 seconds. What if you were encouraging someone going through, you know, everybody, what I have found out, and you too, everybody has gone through or is going through something or will go through something where they wonder if God can bring them to the other side or fix it, or if they can have redemption. What would be a word of encouragement? And then I'll ask you to pray for everyone that's listening.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I think every time I share my story, I am just shocked all over again at how many people are dealing with just even marriage situations and the heartbreak of that. And so I think you can feel like everything's over in those seasons. You feel like this is not what I pictured. And then it's all, you know, it really can just mess with your head and your faith. It can mess with your faith. But an encouragement that I always try to give is that your story is still being written and it's not over, and you're just in a weird chapter, but you're going to come through, and there's more to be written. And so you just hang in there, and you just, you know, if you're a woman listening to this right now, I think, you know, do your dishes, put on your makeup, put on an outfit that you like, and just face the world every morning. And I think that that's powerful. And just get up and do what you need to do, and put one foot in front of the other. And I'm not a great counselor, because I'm always like, all right, let's get up, let's do this. And so I always try to get people to go to an actual counselor, because I have compassion, deep compassion, but I always say, do your dishes and put your makeup on, and let's do this. Let's move forward.
I tell these young girls, wash your hair and shave your legs. Let's go, girls. I tell them all the time.
Yes.
Paint the barn and face the world.
It's true. I think there's power in that, and just not, you know, don't wallow. You can be sad, but at the end of the day, we can rise up and trust that God is for us, and we can grab a hold of scripture and quote it all over our lives and just believe like good things are coming. And so be encouraged, you know, it's not the end. Your story's still being written.
Well, thank you so much. A quick prayer and then we'll close this. But I challenge people listening, receive the prayer, receive it. You don't need to guess this or overthink it. Just receive the prayer and say, okay, this is it. Today is a new day.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Okay, let's pray. Lord, thank you so much that you are a faithful God. And thank you, God, that you carry us through just some really dark times, but you are faithful to your word. And Lord, I thank you for your word that says that you give beauty for ashes. And so for those who are listening right now who are just in a really difficult season, I pray, God, you would remind them of that, remind them of your faithfulness. And Lord, I pray that you would begin to just help them to write a new chapter and move forward in faith and just believing the best days are ahead and they can look to you because you're a good God and you are true to your word. So I just pray that you would just bring encouragement and strength and just a fight, put a fight in them to fight for their future, fight for their children, their future. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Amen. Well, Mandy, thank you very much for saying yes. Honestly, I'm so proud that we are a part of this story and that you're in our family. God, he just is, he's good. He's really smart. I feel God has it all under control. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, absolutely. It was an honor.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.